In a time when there seems to be an abundance of food in our supermarkets and its variety of sources, from processed to organic, it's easy to forget that the small American farmer is in more peril now than ever before. In her first feature film, Runoff, Kimberly Levin, a biochemist turned playwright, theater, and TV director, tells the story of a family farm struggling to maintain its independence while having to deal with dwindling customers, an expanding agro-conglomerate, and a serious illness. Joanne Kelly plays Betty, a strong-willed woman who has to make hard ethical choices for her family when her husband no longer can. After screenings at festivals for a year to great acclaim, the movie opens a commercial run at the Village East Cinema. And I'm very pleased. It opens tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
And I'm very pleased to welcome Kimberly and Joanne to our show. Hello.
Hi, Leonard.
Hi.
Thanks so much for having us.
Kimberly, thank you so much.
As I've said, Kimberly, you have a very eclectic resume. Did you draw upon your skills and life experience as a biochemist, playwright, and director of various kinds to make this film?
I did. So I originally trained as a biochemist, and the seeds of the idea of the film Runoff come from work that I was doing as a field biochemist testing stream waters in Kentucky, where I grew up. And when I was there doing that research, I helped to uncover that there was a textile plant that was dumping raw, untreated effluent into this tiny little stream that fed into the state's largest tourist attraction, Lake Cumberland, where plenty of people get their drinking water from. So this was picked up on by activists and by attorneys, and a long legal battle ensued. Eventually, the plant was actually closed down, which to me felt like it should have been a victory, but the plant was relocated. So it really became a relocation of the problem to a different community.
And that inspired your thinking about doing this screenplay?
It did, because I really started to think about the way that people make choices, the way they prioritize when they make choices, who they prioritize, how they prioritize. And I started to think about that in terms of how I would make a choice if my back were against the wall and there were no good options in front of me. And I started drawing that circle around myself and saying, who's inside that circle? Is it me? Is it my family? Is it my community? And how far does that circle extend?
Joanne, you're in Los Angeles now, but didn't you grow up in Newfoundland?
I did. I grew up in a town of about 1,200 people in a place called Batis Fair on the south coast of Newfoundland.
Do you feel there's a similarity between the small communities and fishing villages there and the rural setting of this movie?
Absolutely. You know, when I picked up the script, I knew instinctively right away who she was. Growing up in such a rural place where, you know, your lifestyle is filled with hunting and fishing, and your food source is something that you interact with and see every day. You know that world, that sort of rural, honest, edgy kind of place. It was one of the better scripts that I've ever read, and I'm so excited to be a part of it, and I'm so excited it's coming out in New York.
But your background couldn't have prepared you for having to work with so many live animals, especially those bees.
I loved the bees. You just have to sing to them. That's the trick with bees. You know, I grew
so
up
you,
in a farm.
Now you're an experienced beekeeper?
It was pretty, I loved it. I thought it was, I wish I was an experienced beekeeper, but maybe one day. But I did grow up on a farm with goats and horses, so I have worked with large animals, and it didn't, you know, doesn't really faze me. There's something quite lovely about cows.
Kimberly, although there are other movies about irresponsible environmental business practices, like Michael Clayton, A Civil Action, Aaron Brockovich, they all involve fighting large corporations. Are small farmers just as responsible for cutting corners as big agro?
Well, really, with this story, my main interest was to personalize this situation of farmers having their backs against the wall and create a kind of a reflection of the gray area that we're all living in right now. We outsource almost everything that we consume, and so every choice we make is very complicated, just as it is for the farmers. And I'm hoping that there's, for the viewer, enough space in the narrative for them to personalize the story and tell the story so that the meaning becomes deeply personal.
The primary antagonist in this film is a big agro company. Did you know when you were giving it that name that it was the name of one of the titans of Greek mythology?
I did. Uh-huh. I did, yeah.
So that's why you gave it that? It's kind of a stand-in for Monsanto, I assume.
Cargill, any of those big companies.
Even though this is a movie about today, the struggle against the powers that be is kind of something that has been a tradition in movies, going back to the Westerns.
Yeah, I mean, for me, in a lot of ways, it's especially the one line for this film, it feels like a Western. It's about a woman with her back against the wall who goes to extreme lengths to defend her family when they're threatened from their land. I mean, that does. It sounds like an old Western. And it definitely has some of those qualities in it.
Joanne, this must have been a physically taxing role. How do you prepare for something like this? Do you have to read up on it or speak to other farmers?
You know, that's one of the gifts of what I do. You get to fall into these pockets of knowledge. I basically, you know, learned as much about Kentucky as I could, books, poetry, plays, any literature that came out of there, music, films. You know, you just sort of embrace everything that you can find and consume it until, you know, hopefully it just sort of breathes out of your pores. So that's kind of how I attacked that.
I would also follow up on that and just say that Joanne spent some time, as well as Neil Huff, the male lead, with farmers in that community leading up to us shooting during the rehearsal period, and really was able to go out to the dairy and, you know, have the farmer show her, how do I believably stick my hand up under an udder of a cow and check it for infection.
But I'm assuming that the farmers were happy that you were doing this because to some degree you were also telling their stories.
Well, you know, I think they were very conflicted too. As I mentioned before, mm-hmm. this is a kind of, you know, challenging topic. There's no good or bad. Everybody's in a tight corner and everybody's
right. This
got
isn't the organic farmer going up against the big agribusiness.
That's right. It's not the David and Goliath we're used to, and that's why I'm hoping the film has a kind of reflective quality for the audience. You know, gaining access to the locations I knew was going to be a big deal and something that we had to follow through on to make the film work. And just took a lot of time on the ground, relationship building with farmers and going and listening to their stories. And I also used it as an opportunity to make the script more accurate and detailed by having them give me feedback on it.
Joanne, outside of the business of the farm, one of Betty's struggles is the relationship with her children. Her story is about her changing role as a mother. Mm-hmm. While she's trying to pretty much run this farm all by herself after her husband becomes ill, you get a feeling that it's all driving her just a little crazy.
Yes, isn't that the way with all of us? You know, what was so interesting for me, especially with her relationship with her son, I'm not a mother myself, but my relationship with my parents, that generational divide, the fact that she can't understand him, that he's a bit of a secret to her.
Because he's artistic?
Because he's artistic, because he's from a generation that she's simply not. Even me going home now and, you know, but where I grew up was so rural and so isolated, and with, you know, the internet being, having come into its own in the last 15 years and having it be accessible there to people, it's changed the way that people think there. And my parents, certainly, there's a shift in thinking, you know, between people who had access to that growing up and people who didn't. And I think that's sort of the same thing that's going on with Betty and her son. She wants to give him everything that he wants, but she can't really fathom the things that he wants. It's so outside of her circle of understanding.
But she's very accepting of him at the same time.
Well, she just loves him so much. You know, I think all parents want to give their children every single opportunity they can without understanding what their children want, without being able to sort of understand where that want comes from.
With me now are Joanne Kelly, who stars in Runoff, and Kimberly Levine, who wrote and directed the film that opens tomorrow at the Village East Cinema. Where did the epigraph for the movie come from? At the beginning of the film, we see this thing that says, "Before the river came the rain, before the rain came the sea." You don't attribute it to anyone. I Googled it. I couldn't find
We wrote
any
it.
Oh, you made it up.
We wrote it. I wrote it in collaboration with my amazing producer, who also happens to be my husband, Kurt Pitzer, who is a journalist and author, so a brilliant writer in his own right. And it, you know, it has, again, can be interpreted in a deeply personal way for the viewer, but, you know, my intention is that it should be a metaphor for the water cycle, that the water, whatever we put in the water, in some way, shape, or form, always comes back to us.
I assume, Joanne, that there's a certain amount of pleasure in playing a complex and flawed character. But were you helped by the fact that you had a female director?
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's Kim's love letter to where she's from. And also with her background in theater, you know, there's not a lot of directors out there who speak the language of the actor, and Kim really does. And it was a collaboration, as much of a collaboration that I've had the joy of partaking in a long time. Films like these, experiences like these, don't come along a lot for actors, especially women, you know, where you get to play such a complex character. And it was such a joy to go to work every day and have someone who, you know, whose heart was on the table as mine was.
Well, in a movie of this sort, where there has to be a very tight budget, does that help you or does that hurt you? Because you're not going to do 50 takes until the line is delivered just right.
You go first, Joe.
It's exciting. For me, all of my best experiences have been in small independent films, simply because people are there for all the right reasons. And like I said, to be a part of someone's love letter to where they grew up from is such a beautiful experience. Something that you could throw $100 million at it and you couldn't replicate an experience like that.
Yeah, I was just going to say that there's a kind of formality that comes with working in a short span of time and a commitment to a vision and being very specific about what that vision is. And since you don't have all the time and money in the world, you make a commitment to that, you live or die by it, and hope that it turns out.
But you come from a theatrical background. Again, something quite different. The actor only has one opportunity to say it each time the play is performed.
That's right, but they have a lot of time to prepare and to rehearse and to get deeper and deeper into the character. And it was one of the reasons that I fought very hard to get rehearsal time with the actors on the ground in Kentucky, to give them time to gel as a family, to give them time to go out into the community and do research and feel what it was like to be about part of that community. So I really fought for that, and I think that it comes across in all the actors' performances and the authenticity of it.
Is the dream of owning and running an independent farm now in danger in this country?
Of course.
Well, why do you think that is? Because farmers have found other outlets. Small farmers now go to farmers markets. Sometimes they produce produce just for restaurants. What's the problem?
Well, I mean, to give you just one specific example, Terry Rowlett is the wonderful dairy farmer who let us on, opened his operation for us to shoot in. And Terry's making about $50 a day with his dairy. And this dairy's been in his family for generations.
So $50 only?
$50 a day.
How many cows does he have? A cow and a half?
Over 100 head. Over 100 head, yeah. And so Terry actually subsidizes his income by growing tobacco. And it's been very hard for him to break into kind of the organic stuff. It's very costly for the farmers, even if they have that desire to do that. And you don't have a lot of the next generation, this work getting passed down. I mean, it's hard work. You never get to leave the farm. There's no vacation time. There's nobody to kind of clean up the mess. You're there 365 days a year.
So is that why some farmers feel that they have to make hard choices between family and ethics, particularly if they're working on a rather small scale?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true of farmers, and it's true of you and me. I mean, all of us are making tough choices right now. We live in a complex world, and I think that their story is a specific one that is hopefully resonant with the way a lot of us are living in this time economically right now.
There, in the movie, you compose the shots to make it seem as if the industrial space and the domestic space of a farm are in extremely close quarters. Were you shooting in particular farms where that was the case?
We were shooting in a bunch of different farms, a turkey farm in Erlanger. We were shooting at this dairy farm, the hog farm. I mean, I definitely wanted to give a sense. I don't know if you've ever been on location in a farm, but there's...
I've been to farms.
Yeah, so there's a real claustrophobia that you sense from the animals being packed into that space, the heat off their body, the kind of fear of your interaction with them and them with each other, and I wanted that to come across.
And then the film has this recurring motif of a crop dusting plane passing over the fields. Alfred Hitchcock aside, I read that there's an interesting story about the filming of that.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it was really tough to find somebody who wanted to fly that plane. The state of Kentucky, their film office was very helpful in finding that person, but the crop duster was really conflicted because he didn't want crop dusting portrayed in a bad way. At the same time, he personally is being squeezed out of his business because there's a corporate conglomerate of crop dusters out of Texas that's pushing him out. So he had this kind of his own squeeze he's in that made him identify with the characters.
Joanne, your character seems to have certain philosophical differences with her husband. He, for example, is also administering antibiotics to pigs, and then, of course, he gets sick. I'm not sure whether there's a link between the two. You are a lot more sympathetic to your son's aspirations than your husband is. Was that dynamic something you had to work out with your co-star?
Yeah, I mean, the gift of a co-star like Neil Huff he's so great, you just trust his choices because they're right on. But there is a divide. I mean, there is a divide in thinking, I think, between Betty and Frank. I understood who he is simply because I come from a place where there are men like that who are steeped in tradition and who, you know, take pride and put moral character first above anything. That's all they have at the end of the day is who they are, and they draw their lines in the sand and stay on one side of it. And I think that Neil did such a wonderful job portraying Frank in that way. And I think that's the fundamental difference between those characters. I think Betty was a lot more flexible ethically than Frank was. And I think it's probably the reason she loves him so much.
Jim Ridley of the Nashville Scene compares this movie to the socially conscious films of the Belgian Dardenne brothers. And one of their movies, Rosetta, actually got child labor laws changed. Do you have any hopes that somebody in politics will see this film and perhaps come up with some changes in the way the laws are structured?
I definitely hope that there's a kind of ground-up movement with the film where it gets out to enough viewers, particularly in the middle of the country and in places where they're being affected in this way, that brings disparate parties to the table of communication who haven't been before.
And what have you been doing since you made this film, Joanne?
Me? I just finished filming. I've been mostly doing independent film and theater, actually. Which has been a real joy. I'm actually producing and starring in a play for an independent company in Toronto called The House of Yes, which I'm really excited about in the fall. And, you know, just trying to find wonderful stories. It gets harder as a woman as you get older.
Well, you're not that old. But
we
don't have much time.
Kimberly, you, age in Hollywood is different than age in real life.
Another film in the works, Kimberly?
I have another film in the works, but the real focus right now is launching Runoff, getting it out to as many people as possible.
And it opens tomorrow at the Village East Cinema. Thank you both so much for being on our show today.
Thank you so
Thank
much,
you
Leonard.
Thank you so much.